I was, blaming AEW for feeding you chicken shit, knowing you mindless millennials would be eating it up as if it were chicken salad, when it's really been your fault all along.
Make chicken salad out of chicken shit. People is as people does, that's all there.
Welcome to Making Chicken Salad, the Wrestle Radio Australia podcast, where we talk about everything going on around the world of wrestling. I'm an empty-headed dumb fuck going into business for myself, Lachlan Albert, and I'm joined by a man who shares a bank account with his mother, Todd Eastman. Todd, how you doing, mate?
Well, you just proved that very first statement by introing me.
And I am joined...
I would not trust you to run a fucking Target, mate.
And I'm joined by a man who could not manage a Target, Jeff Setti.
Yeah, well, you put me in charge, Lockie. You see where you're getting at.
Stole the joke before I could say it, Todd. Jesus, good. You're already off to a good start.
Can I just say that my name is now GF Punk?
Damn it. Wait till he's locked me and sees his.
Oh, mine's a classic.
Well, that's suitable for the person who won the Renegades championship, although he's not.
Yes.
But we can talk about that later in the show.
Fire off. Tell us about a man who smells like pee and sucks toes, but he's my dad. Jeff?
He's your dad.
What's going on there?
It is the Renegades of Wrestling show, Ecstasy for the Gold. It's a very sort of NWA type title. You can hear Ric Flair, Ecstasy for the Gold. It was a great show, actually. We opened with Matt Hayter against Rat Daddy. Hayter draws that heat like no one else. Rat Daddy took the victory. It was such a fun match, and the crowd were right behind Rat Daddy. I tried to start up a Urine's Gonna Kill You chant, which one person in the whole auditorium reacted to. Luckily, it was Mikey J, who thought that was quite fun. We follow up with Matt Diamond versus Lockie Hendricks. Guys, Lockie Hendricks has turned heel.
It's happened.
It's what? Happened. Exactly what I said would happen.
Don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Lockie Hendricks went after Matt Diamond. Matt got the pin, and afterwards Lockie sat in the corner and had a crisis of confidence and then waffled Matt. Beat the absolute doohickey out of him and walked backstage in quite the huff. You could see that might have been coming. We then have Aisha.
Bad guy? Really? I just don't see it.
No, of course not. We then have Aisha against Ta Lee. This was quite a good back and forth match. Ta Lee took it out, and it's a bit of a shame. As I said last week, I would have liked to have seen Aisha take the gold. And then Shazza came straight out for the championship match. Ta Lee was already too tired, having wrestled for about 9 minutes against Aisha, and Shazza made relatively quick work of her. After the break, the Bastard Brothers against the Velocities. Gosh, it was a good back and forth match with Crackerjack making sure he told everybody he was abiding by the rules. He and Gore really took the high flyers to task. And it was a lot of fun. In the end, the Bastard Brothers got the win, and the Velocities came out with steel chairs afterwards. And for their next show, we're promised a 2 out of 3 falls match, which should be really, really good. We then have Emin the Kid, or Emin Usman, as he is now known, against your guy, whose name eludes me for the moment, from Adelaide.
Zach Sabbath.
Yes, Zach Sabbath. Thanks for leaving me hanging there just long enough. If we were in the same room.
What we do, sir.
If we were in the same room, I'd get my coach to throw a chair at you. Anyway.
And I would bite you.
That was a great match. That was a really fun match. Emin took the win with a little help from Murdoch Meatball. But it was a fun match. Aisha made herself very, very... very conspicuous there. That team is going to be one to mess with when they eventually all get it together. And then, of course, we have the final. We have Matt Diamond versus Rat Daddy. Interesting choice, two faces against each other. Took a while for the crowd to get into it because they weren't sure who they wanted to win. Matt Diamond was obviously quite badly injured by the beatdown from Lockie Hendricks. And Rat Daddy took it out. The crowd was certainly very happy. Dueling chants, all that sort of thing had happened. And it's a really, really fun show. Obviously, now Matt's got a gripe with Lockie. Rat Daddy stands tall. I imagine that that we'll see Matt Hayter possibly come and try and get that belt off Rat Daddy, who does smell like wee. But it was a nice celebration for him and a deserved first champion.
Just so you know, as a side note, Matt got concussion on this past weekend. He's also got a tear in his left shoulder, so he's actually stepping away from wrestling for a while to rehab. So best of luck to Matt. Hope to see him soon. He's one of the best in the country, probably one of the best in the country that doesn't get recognized as one of the best in the country until they see him on a card. Then they're like, oh yeah, he's really good. But yeah, you never hear him, like people say, well, when they talk about really good wrestlers in the country, for some reason, Matt's never one of those names, which is stupid because he is like one of the best.
He's been up
in the country
there for a long time.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And he is a very entertaining performer, and he's got such sound, you know, the expression sound fundamentals. That's Matt Diamond, like just really puts on a good show. Of course, the concussion came at the hands of the horrid Lockie Hendricks. So, you know, we need to, something needs to be done about that boy.
Absolutely. And look, this is a show that obviously you were there live, Jeff, but it's something I'm really looking forward to seeing. So if you're like me and want to watch that show, you can do so on Fight Plus. Head on over to Fight, search for Renegades of Wrestling. The Ecstasy of Gold is premiering in about a week on the 16th. That's going to go up to be available to watch.
And speaking of Fight, you can also catch MCW New Horizons tomorrow night. I'll just quickly run down the card. Em and the Kid against Edward Dusk. That should be great. Jake Andrew Arthur versus Zhang Wen, the Ascension Tournament semi-final match for the night. The Natural Classics, Tom and Stevie Philippe will do their tag team celebration. I love a good tag team celebration. You know someone's going to come out. Jessica Troy defending the belt against Delta, the MCW Women's Championship. That I'm just looking forward to that so much. And of course, the MCW belt is on the line with the one and done Adam Brooks against Mitch Waterman. I don't know if this is going to be Brooksy's last match or not, but either way, thank you, Brooksy. You've been a joy to watch over the last few years.
Will we see a photo of the MCW title in a fridge at the end of the night?
Quite possibly. So you can watch that on Fight TV tonight, as you're probably listening to this.
Yes, it should be out Saturday morning, so yes.
And then, look, just while we're promoting the local stuff that's going on in the world of wrestling, PWA coming to Queensland is something worth pointing out. So if you're one of those local listeners to me and Todd, they've started announcing some of the matches, at least for the Gold Coast show, including Chris Basso versus Ricky South, Robbie Eagles versus Unsocial Jordan, a 20-person rumble for a title shot the following night, and a match that I'm super excited for, Outback Adam versus Jessica Troy. That's going to be a belter.
And also, just quietly, my boys might have called somebody out last night that might go up on social media soon. And we'll see if these people accept the challenge.
That's very
juicy.
Exciting.
It's a juicy little morsel.
A juicy morsel. So, look, we love covering the Australian stuff here, but I mean, as far as weeks of wrestling go, it's been a big one. So we kind of need to get the show on the road. Let's
in a busy week in wrestling, it's been a hell of a month.
It's, it's been 2022 is wrestling's COVID year.
And we all know what everyone wants to hear us talk about right now. So we're going to crack straight into WWE stuff. First of all, Braun Strowman is back. The Monster Among Men has returned and is no longer controlling his own narrative. I'm going to throw this one to Todd. Do you think it was the right choice for Braun to come back to the WWE?
For Braun? Yeah, because you get paid. It's pure and simple. And I mean, who knows how they're going to book him? They booked him fairly bloody strong in his debut. He came out and destroyed, six guys?
Yep.
I noticed that I think it was Street Profits. Oh, no, Street Profits got hit. The New Day maybe buggered off real quick, so they weren't really a part of it. But the other six really copped a Strowmaning.
And that's after he flipped a car. Jeff, are you excited to see the Monster Among Men back in the WWE?
Occasionally. And I know that's a bit of a non-answer and I apologise, but I don't want him on TV every week. But using him sparingly, like a bit of an attraction, not as sparingly as Brock, but just sparingly, wheel him out, get him to do us a bit, get him, you know, get him in a feud, but make the feud longer term so it means something to both people. Sure, love it.
Yeah, but what they did too was smart. Like they had him come out, destroy some people, walk to the back, yep. And then cut a quick promo backstage going, I'll see somebody on SmackDown this week.
Perfect.
So probably SmackDown he'll come out and destroy another group of people.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I mean? That they won't have him in a 15, 20 minute match his second week in.
No. I also think he looks a bit smaller. He's not quite as built as he was, but he looks good. I hope that he puts it all together and, you know, has a decent time there. It's quite clear AEW don't want him. He doesn't probably quite fit what their direction at the moment. So, you know, I'm not surprised he's back.
Their direction.
Todd stumbling around in the dark there.
A visual joke there for our podcast listeners.
As Tripp said on his interview with Ariel last weekend, you know, yeah, he's a bit of an asshole to deal with, but he's our asshole.
Yeah.
And that's what he wants.
Yeah. Look, let's move on and talk about what else has gone on in the WWE this week. Let's talk about Clash at the Castle, a huge event held over in the UK. I'm going to run through the card and then we can talk about some stuff that happened. We had Madcap Moss and the Street Profits defeating Theory and Alpha Academy. We had Rey Mysterio and Edge defeating Judgment Day, followed by the what seemed inevitable finally coming true, Dominic turning on his father and kind of sort of joining Judgment Day. We had Gunther defeat Sheamus for the Intercontinental title. Damage Control in the form of Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky defeated Bianca Belair, Alexa Bliss, and Asuka in six-woman tag. Seth Rollins defeating Riddle. Liv Morgan retaining her SmackDown Women's Championship over Shayna Baszler. And Roman Reigns defeating Drew McIntyre for the WWE Undisputed Championship with an assist from Solo Sikoa. Let's touch on a couple of things here. First off, Gunther and Sheamus was exactly the match I wanted Gunther and Sheamus to be.
Big meaty bear men slapping the piss out of each other. Love it.
It was beautiful. That's if you like a physical match, there it is. And delightful. Let's jump in quickly and talk about this Mysterio angle. Dominic, after the match, so Rey Mysterio and Edge got the win. Then Dominic delivered a swift kick to the Edge tickles and then a clothesline to Rey Mysterio. He's since come out on Raw kind of with Judgment Day, cementing that turn. Now, Todd, we talked a lot about this weeks and weeks ago, feeling like it was inevitable and it was going to happen. It's been going on for a long time. I'll throw this one to Jeff. Jeff, do you think this turn was overdue?
I think Dominic is where he is because of who Sonny is. I think inevitably they had to do something with him because he's not the most exciting person to watch. He's not got a lot of in-ring charisma. He's David Flair, for fuck's sake. Move on, please.
Well, we had the David Flair turn then. Look, let's jump to the main event. So there's a little bit that I didn't touch on here, which is obviously Drew McIntyre was the hometown boy coming in as a bit of the hero. There was a teased cash-in from Austin Theory, which was thwarted when Tyson Fury knocked him out from a seat in the front row. Following that, obviously, the Usos were not present, so they couldn't be an assist, but their younger brother, Solo Sikoa, came up from NXT and got the assist in, and the defeated Drew McIntyre then sung to the hometown crowd with Tyson Fury.
To be fair, he didn't know they were still on the air when all of that happened. He thought that was off. That was off the air.
More sense.
Because there's a point where there's a point where Drew actually goes, "Are we still on air? I'm just having fun."
Yeah. And to be fair, he doesn't know all the words to Sweet Caroline either.
Does anyone?
He thinks the words to Sweet Caroline are Wonderwall. Great, Drew.
No, I think he didn't know those words. So he goes, "Fuck it, I know Wonderwall. I'll sing that." So he tried to get Tyson Fury to sing it. And Tyson wouldn't do it.
It was a mildly entertaining segment, to be honest.
All righty, Todd, what do you think of Solo coming up and joining the Bloodline?
Well, it was bound to happen. Like, especially now that Trips is there, he's going to keep the families sort of together. He's going to let people know these guys are all related. This family, it's a good fit for them because they sort of, they've got the tag guys, but they needed a muscle. And that's what Solo Sikoa is going to be. He's going to be the muscle there for him, obviously. I've no problem with it. It's the same thing now that I wonder if they're going to maybe call him like Solo Uso or something like that now, because as you can see, everyone's getting their names back. Like Austin Theory is now Austin Theory again. Tommaso Ciampa is Tommaso Ciampa. Yeah, so, and like, I think Trips even said in that Ariel Helwani interview about that. Like, let's acknowledge that people's past. Let's acknowledge that people have two names. So all that's going to start happening again. So it's good. I think it's going to fit because of their family. So it's an easy fit, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's quickly talk about the women's championship match. Liv Morgan defeating Shayna Baszler. In a fine match, Jeff, what are you thinking of the Liv Morgan title run so far?
It's okay. Like with all slightly flawed title runs, it's not the most important story in that title picture, which is Ronda Rousey, which is a little bit disappointing. I also think, I really like Liv Morgan and this could have been something special, but they've just kind of made it a cliche. They've made her the same as the Ray run of several years ago, but obviously without Eddie being involved. So, it's just a bit, it's nothing.
Look, I like her. I like the chair. Like I was saying on episodes, they should be giving her the belt already. They should be giving the thing is, she's not a wrestler that's good enough to be able to hold the belt. She needs people that are better wrestlers to work with to like make her look good. And that's, as a champion, that should never be the person that's got the belt.
Well, that's where Shayna did a good job on Sunday.
Shayna would be a better world champion, to be honest with you.
I really want to see
work. She could work with anybody.
I love Shayna. She's excellent, I think.
Thankfully, if one person can reheat her, it's someone like Trips.
Yeah, yeah.
I know maybe I'm putting too much faith in the guy, but I think he'll go to efforts to reheat her.
Now, Todd, Jeff, before we move on, any closing thoughts about Clash at the Castle, either specifically or as an overall card?
I thought overall it was the most, I think I said the other week, the most anticipated card since probably WrestleMania 30. And I think it pretty much delivered. I really enjoyed a lot of the action. I really enjoyed a lot of the character work. And I think that, as you said, for me, match of the night was probably the same as yours, Lockie, which was the Sheamus-Gunther match, Sheamus-Walter match, which was just two guys just hitting the piss out of each other. Sheamus's chest was bright red, and it was just a great visual. And you can see that if Triple H is doing the booking, you can see he's such a fan of an older style and such a fan of giving matches time to breathe. I also really liked the opener. I really liked Bayley and Co. against Bianca and Co. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I also really liked Riddle and Rollins because they told, that was a story. Rollins was like, I don't know if I can beat this guy because of his, like, being an MMA fighter, like a trainer. If I get him pissed off, he won't be able to concentrate and I can beat him. And that's a story he told. That's a story he's been trying to tell with every guy. If you notice everyone he's been wrestling, he gets under their skin, he pisses them off, so they're not thinking straight, and he can capitalize on it. And if anything, this is what if you are trying to like silently on the, well, not silently, but like on the down low, heat Matt Riddle up to be like a future world champion. This is a good way to do it. Because he's had a thing where the guy's gotten under his skin. He's pissed him off. Okay, I can't let that happen anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you make him Matt Riddle serious fighter, as opposed to Matt Riddle junkie dude, you've got a winner. You've got a world champ. If you make him junkie dude, you've got someone who might hold the tag belts with Randy Orton for 6 months until they turn on each other.
Yep. Fully agree. Now let's talk about NXT Worlds Collide. NXT UK no longer going to exist. So we had this show where NXT and NXT UK basically had an opportunity for all of the championships to merge. Show opened with Carmelo Hayes defeating Ricochet to retain the NXT North American title. From there, the NXT and the NXT UK Tag Team Championships were unified, with Pretty Deadly defeating the Creed Brothers, Gallus, and the team of Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen to earn those championships. The NXT Women's Championship was then unified with the UK Championship in a women's triple threat match, with Mako Satomura and Blair Davenport losing to Mandy Rose, unifying those titles. The NXT Women's Tag Team titles were retained by Katana Chance and Kayden Carter over Judrop and Nikki Ash. And the NXT Championship was unified with the NXT UK Championship as Bron Breakker defeated Tyler Bate. Overall, this show was, for me, it felt a little bit predictable. Because if you look at kind of the way the championships moved, basically everything was retained. And they were retained by the NXT roster rather than the NXT UK roster. Tyler Bate lost the championship. Mako Satomura lost the women's championship. You know, Pretty Deadly got the unified tags. And then we had these...
But Pretty Deadly are originally from UK.
From UK. Yeah. But
yeah,
people who've been showing up on the NXT roster a lot. And then you had matches where main roster people were coming down to challenge for NXT titles in the form of Ricochet and Judrop and Nikki Ash. So as far as like surprise and unexpected results go, I don't think that was present here. What did you guys think of the show?
If you'd have told me two years ago that I would be not unhappy about Mandy Rose beating Satomura and B Priestley, I'll say B Priestley, then I wouldn't believe you. But watching her and her growth over the last year or so, Mandy Rose is a good worker now.
Yeah.
She's actually taken the time in NXT to get better. Surprisingly, you can get better if you get a lot more reps. And that's
No way.
And like, that's why I think
practice makes perfect.
It's almost.
It's weird because she's got this almost Eva Marie type heat and is actually really good.
Mm.
And they're playing on that heat really, really well. I enjoyed the show. The main event, Tyler Bate is phenomenal, and at such a young age, and to be that good, that young, I hope he's world champion one day. I know that sounds weird, but you know, you could see him body slamming Brock Lesnar and the crowd going nuts for it.
He's a big strong boy.
Strong boy, all right. I want to call out the opening match, Carmelo Hayes versus Ricochet. Twitter, they've implied that this is maybe not the last time they're going to see each other, and I am not complaining. I've been a long-time Ricochet fan. That's no secret. I was a big Prince Puma fan. So seeing him go up against Carmelo, who's someone who is also super athletic, they did an incredible... They both simultaneously hit springboard crossbodies in the middle of the ring. The athleticism's ridiculous. So that North American title match I thought was really good. And it also did a really good job of calling back to, I guess, Ricochet's time as North American champion. I thought it was super good.
Absolutely.
It makes me... not upset, but it makes me wish that they had a cruiserweight title in WWE that they treated properly, because he would be the perfect champion to have for that. And they could have a banger match every pay-per-view, just like they used to do for WCW, and he could be that figurehead. Because right now, when you look at it, you look at the IC title, and you really don't want to move it off Gunther. You just don't, because he's like, every match he's having lately is really good. You also don't really want to move the US off Bobby Lashley, because Bobby is over as hell. And if you take it off Bobby, then he's just going to flounder. You know what I mean? Because where does he go? He's sort of caught in that weird space whereas you're either a champion of like the second level, or you're the world champion. You can't really be just floating in between all the time. It's just, he's one of those guys that it just wouldn't work for. So you can't really take it off that off him either. So it's sort of like, there's a sort of a glut of people where he'd be really good, but I don't want to take the belt off him.
Okay, so I have a question. I have a question, and this kind of links back to what we were saying earlier about people reclaiming their names. Will we, because I have a real bone to pick about one name change and gimmick change, complete gimmick change. Triple H is back. Will we soon see the grizzled young veterans?
I don't know, because I think they might like that group that they've got going with, what's his name? Gacy.
It's fun. This is so behind.
And you wouldn't even recognize those two now, because it took me a while to realize who they were, because I sort of checked out of NXT for a while.
But so did I.
The last time we talked about Gacy on here, I think I was very slightly coming off my I hate this so much phase. And Gacy has turned into someone who I find so entertaining, because he's treating the character as a full-on cartoon supervillain, like going on top of, I think before he had a title match, he was on top of a building saying that he was going to take the NXT title and then Bron Breakker's soul, and then laughing maniacally while surrounded by druids. Like, he's gone all the way into this ridiculous character, and I love it.
Oh, I think Gacy's great. I just think that grizzled young veterans deserve better.
Yeah. Oh, the one thing we did not mention though, during when we talked about Clash, is that Imperium are back together.
Yeah.
Yes. Very good point.
And Fabian Eichner has been given another name.
Yeah, he's almost like an Italian name now. He was that gimmick in NXT for a while, and was actually getting over really well. It's a very like
Angelo Lego Sauce is his name apparently.
It's like it was like something Gucci or something like that.
Yeah,
it's really I can't think of it.
And it's really really weird to see. He feuded with Volta for most of last year, but it's weird to see him in Imperium.
Yeah.
I'm going to burn myself because I can't remember that.
Not, did they feud?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a whole, like, leaving angle.
Oh, okay. I did not.
Giovanni, hang on, I've got it. Vinci?
Yeah, yes. There we go. So it was close to Gucci.
There we go. It was close to Gucci. And he wears like the Gucci. He wore
the gear, style. The color of the gear, because I remember Mitch Ryder, the one of the guys that I met down here, for a while there, Gen X were coming out. There was a tag team we had. We were coming out and we'd sort of ripped off the Gucci colors and designs for the boys. And he was like, oh, straight up taking my gimmick. I said, well, no, it's different, mate. He's signed and making money.
Look, I'm sure that while we were having that conversation, there were a million people yelling at their phones the name of Giovanni Vinci. If you want to yell at us and tell us what we're getting wrong, there's places to do it. At Wrestle Radio AU on Twitter, Instagram, Wrestle Radio Australia on Facebook. Find us. Tell us what we're getting wrong. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear from us on the podcast. We're going to go to a break because we do not want to be interrupted. Oh.
If we're going to a break, are we going to come back to AEW?
That's the plan.
Oh, because I got an exciting trailer for the new series of Dark Side of the Ring that I thought we could play as the ad break.
Brilliant. All right, let's check that out, and we'll be back right after this.
Somebody found something out or heard something or said, let's put this guy to task.
You talk a big game about workers' rights, yeah? Well, you've shown the exact opposite since you've gotten here.
Why else would you do that? I think that really did hurt him. Just out of the blue, one day he comes out and is screaming, you know, whatever the details were.
I haven't had anything to do with Scott Colton in almost a decade. Probably wanted nothing to do with him even longer than that. It's fucking unfortunate that I have to come up here and speak on this. I'm on my time. This is a fucking business.
His tone was different, and he was more serious. And I'm just like, is everything okay, man?
The fact that I have to sit up here because we have irresponsible people who call themselves EVPs and couldn't fucking manage a target.
We couldn't believe it. He was one of our heroes, legitimate heroes. This is terrible.
There's people who call themselves EVPs that should have fucking known better. This shit was none of their business.
It didn't make any sense to me. What are you talking about?
What did I ever do in this world to deserve an empty-headed, fucking dumb fuck like Hangman Adam Page to go out on national television and fucking go into business for himself? For what?
Imagine this guy that you watched on television for years. Now he's calling your friend out.
In his mind, Hangman went out and started addressing things that he was not having. And he's clearly, that was months ago.
I offered him money. He said it was not enough. He went ahead with the lawsuit and sued. It's his fucking funeral. I don't care. He shares a bank account with his mother that tells you all you need to know about what kind of character that is.
It was like a downward spiral.
Any way you slice it, you can see this isn't good.
I'm hurt and I'm old and I'm fucking tired. And I work with fucking children.
Set your ass down. Go to sleep. Give us all a break.
And what happened afterwards? That's just life, dude. Ace Steel threw a chair and hit Nick.
What was it, like a chair shot to the head or something? It's like a terrible chair shot to the head.
He had never done anything like that. Just out of the blue, he was bullying.
Bottom line is that we have to stop letting others' transgressions go without punishment. My sense of it was that the company wanted to address this matter, take it off our books, do the right thing by those that have money, and then move on.
Welcome back to Making Chicken Salad. We are about to talk AEW, and boy, oh boy, has it been a week in AEW. So, look, first up, there was All Out. I'm going to run through the entire card of All Out. So settle in, grab a drink, get a pillow ready, because this is 15 matches that I'm going to fire off. Sammy Guevara and Tay Mello retained the AAA World Mixed Tag Team Championship over Ortiz and Ruby Soho.
Then and destroyed Hook, Ruby's face.
And destroyed Ruby's face. Then Hook retained the FTW Championship over Angelo Parker.
And destroyed Ruby's face.
Destroyed Ruby's face again.
Oh, can I make a quick thing about that? Like, before we keep going, I freaked out because I swear to God, I thought Action Bronson was Bray Wyatt for a second.
Lachlan.
I was just like, holy shit. What? Oh, that's not him. Okay.
Lachlan, please move on. Please, just move on.
He was looking up Action Bronson just then.
Action who? Park defeated Kip Sabian for the AEW All-Atlantic Championship, and Eddie Kingston defeated Tomohiro Ishii in a singles match. That was all on the pre-show. Opened with the casino ladder match, where the Joker won the match without ever really entering the match, because Stokely Hathaway climbed the ladder after having his goons attack everyone in the match, retrieved the giant poker chip, and handed it to the Joker. Then we had the tournament final for the Trios Championship, where the Elite, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, defeated Hangman Adam Page and the Dark Order. Then the TBS Championship was defended by Jade Cargill over Athena. Then we had a six-man tag match where Wardlow and FTR beat Jay Lethal on the Motor City Machine Guns. Then Powerhouse Hobbs defeated Ricky Starks. We had an AEW World Tag Team Championship defense, Swerve in Our Glory, defeating the Acclaimed. The interim AEW World AEW Women's Championship was awarded to Toni Storm as she defeated Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Hikaru Shida. Christian Cage defeated Jungle Boy with a re-return of Luchasaurus. Chris Jericho beat Bryan Danielson. Then we had a six-man tag match where Darby Allin, Sting, and Miro defeated the House of Black, with the Malakai Black bowing to the crowd and hugging Brody and Buddy after the match. And then
that was off camera, by the way.
Camera? Off camera. And then a singles match for the AEW World Championship, CM Punk defeating Jon Moxley. That show was long.
It was two shows, so the pre-show and then the show.
I was clean shaven before the show started, and I looked like it afterwards.
I had a full head of hair.
And then I should mention what happened after the main event, which is the Joker returned after having won the Casino ladder match and revealed himself to be MJF. It was a lot of matches, and I'm not finished watching it all, if I'm being totally honest. It was too much.
I watched it live. Yep. It was essentially an episode of Dynamite and then a good pay-per-view. So a lot of those matches just could have been on Dynamite. And some of them even could have been on Rampage, let's be honest.
And as much as I love them, FTR, that six-man could have been a Rampage main event.
Athena against Jade, that's a Rampage match.
That was a fucking AEW dark match. I'm sorry, but that was fucking shocking.
It was not great. Sammy, that was in the pre-show, so that's fine. The trios titles, that could have been a main event of a Rampage or a Dynamite. Look, I think you and I mentioned this before I actually came on board in a more regular capacity. There are matches when watching an AEW pay-per-view where you're just going, why is this on here? I'm finding AEW is really frustrating at the moment. They've got the best talent in the world, but they're just not producing good shows. The match of the night for me was the Acclaimed against Swerve and Our Glory. And that's just because the crowd reacted so massively for the Acclaimed. I'm surprised they didn't hotshot it.
The Jungle Boy Cage thing, obviously Cage must be injured, and that's why they couldn't do...
Yes, he is.
They couldn't do anything. But the whole, like, Luchasaurus being on that Big Show-ish, turning again.
Yeah, so the story apparently is that when Luchasaurus turned heel to join Christian, then turned back face, but him turning face was a trick.
Ruse.
It was all a deception.
I've got to say, Christian is great in the role. Christian is great as the detestable, smarmy heel.
Oh.
Such a good fucking thing. And I noticed too now, they've gone to actually calling him Jungle Boy Jack Perry.
Yeah,
that's
everyone that was going fucking JR can shut the fuck up, because it was just JR going, this is what he should be all the time. I don't know why you guys are fucking around with this. Just call him Jungle Boy Jack Perry. He's got a famous dad. Let's fucking use this.
Yeah, and I think he's really, really good. It was a short match, but it was more an angle than a match, and Christian's injured. So,
yeah.
That makes sense.
All right.
Yeah, and let's face it, they needed a quick match on this fucking show.
Yeah. Now, a couple of these matches we kind of haven't touched on. The main event and a lot of the matches we haven't touched on because there was fucking 15 of them. The Trios Championship match and the main event, because as is listed in our run sheet here, quote, everything went to shit. So basically, if you have not been paying attention to wrestling news for the past week, after the show, there was a press scrum where CM Punk showed up and kind of took matters into his own hands, spoke about Hangman Page, spoke about EVPs, probably referencing Omega and the Young Bucks.
Definitely really referencing Omega and the Young Bucks.
Oh, yeah.
When you say words like they still think they're in Reseda,
he really went off on Colt Cabana, bringing Colt's mother into it, who apparently Colt shares a bank account with. That's something he decided everyone needed to know. It was chaos. After that, backstage, there was an altercation involving Punk, Ace Steel, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Michael Nakazawa,
Daniel,
and Pat. Yeah. Yep, Christopher Daniels, Pat Buck, and everyone as a result is suspended. So
I got suspended.
You're suspended as well, Jeff?
Yeah, I can't.
Are you suspended due to that fight?
No, I was looking after Punk's dog.
Right.
Okay.
So
Don't speak that way about AJ. No, I'm joking. Oh,
whoa. No.
Can we cut that out, please?
No,
that's it.
I've cut enough out for you over the time. I'm not cutting that one.
So, look, Punk is out for an extended period with suspected torn triceps. And so he has relinquished the AEW championship. Due to the Bucks and Omega being suspended, they have they're not holding the Trios championship. So that's four title belts vacated on the same night that they were earned. So that's very interesting. The new Trios champions were decided in a match on Dynamite, which was won by Death Triangle. So I'm a happy boy because I love Death Triangle. Defeating the best friends for those titles. And then there's going to be a tournament to crown the new AEW World Champion. So basically, the first round is going to have Hangman Page and Brian Danielson, with the winner of that facing...
Well, it's already happened, so we can say...
already happened. Danielson wins that one. So it's going to be Danielson versus Jericho. And then on the other side of the bracket, it's Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin, with the winner of that facing Jon Moxley. And then whoever wins Danielson Jericho and Moxley versus Guevara or Allin, that'll be the title match. And then also MJF has the chip from the casino ladder match.
Yeah. So can we go back to talking about Punk? Because we sort of just skipped straight to...
Yeah, there's all of the news. Yeah. There's all that.
Yeah, it's all hanging there.
Let's talk.
All right.
Todd, fire away.
And we said this off air before, he had this on his mind from the start. He was always going to do this. He was always going to come in and put people on blast for stuff that's happened and stuff that he's pissed off about. I told you guys off air too. He's supposed to be in a really weird position because I really don't like the Young Bucks, and I can see why Punk went off the way he does, because everything he said technically is happening. Like, it's happening. They do their little whisper campaigns and they do all their little... it's probably why Cody ended up leaving, if we're being honest. It's probably why Cody ended up bolting from the place, because he's like, I can't deal with these guys all the time. So all of that is true. But there is a time and a place where you do that, and you do that behind the scenes to Tony Khan. You go, look, this is what's going on. Let's fucking sort this out, can we? You don't do it while Tony's sitting next to you to a room full of reporters. Like, that whole press scrum, the one thing it told me is that none of these people, bar maybe Chris Jericho, respect Tony Khan at all. Yes, Jeff, you were...
I was going to say, I think Moxley does as well. And that was exhibited on Wednesday by the guy who... Because normally the champion goes away for a few months after he loses the belt. You know, it's quite common to rehab his body because he's had a grueling schedule and he's usually on the show a fair bit. But I think Moxley does as well. But I get your point. I agree with your point. I think that Punk could have chosen, you know, time and place. You make sure that you say...
the right thing at the right time, or if you're me 5 minutes ago, the wrong thing at the wrong time. But nonetheless, you make sure that as much as possible, you try and keep your eye professional. You try and keep yourself above board. Now, we can speculate about what was going through his mind. We can speculate about him being upset about being injured. We can speculate about a lot of things. But the fact is that tempers got frayed, tempers got heated, which is, you know, completely understandable. But CM Punk has done this before. This isn't the first time CM Punk's been untoward about co-workers and saying inappropriate things and taking things a bit further than they should be. This is not, like, this is quite clearly not the summer of Punk in terms of, you know, as a promo. It's actually,
it is the winter of his discontent.
Yes, a very good way to put it. It is extremely cold for CM Punk. I had read somewhere that Meltzer was reporting that he could be gone as soon as September 7. Would either of you expect him to come back to AEW?
It depends what happens with Kenny and, well, I don't even know Kenny so much, but the Bucks. And like, it also tells me that backstage rallying talk that they gave did absolutely nothing.
No.
But like we went on, like I said before about the whole, that none of them respect him. Like nothing says more to that to point to me than when Swerve and Our Glory were there. And they were talking about the rematch, having a rematch with the Acclaimed. And Tony's like, yeah, I thought it was a really good match. So we'll probably end up doing that again in Grand Slam. And like normally the wrestler will just be like, keep their opinions to themselves until afterwards and go, dude, why are we doing this again? But not Swerve Strickland straight away. Why? No. And then proceed to go, why don't we just get a black referee in there as well? Have make more history. I don't care. And then went on to blast Billy Gunn, calling him a male, like an old male cheerleader on the outside. They are, and I know Swerve and the Glory is popular, but the Acclaimed are one of the most hottest acts in AEW at the moment. See, and they're going out there and cutting their legs off, which is basically what Punk was mad about Hangman doing at the start of the press scrum.
To me, though, Todd, it almost felt like Swerve was trying to organically work in a heel turn so that the Acclaimed could be faces to take the belt off Swerve and Our Glory. I don't know if that's me misinterpreting what's going on, but to me, that felt like building a feud, a champion saying, why would we defend it against them again? Whereas what Punk did...
I would agree with you, but all of these things, like the press scrum things, have notoriously been out of character. Matt, like press conferences, like the real people talking about what happened during the show. I mean, for the fact that Punk was there talking about Scott Colton.
Yeah.
It just tells me, and like Jericho was talking about, we need, like backstage, we need to stop doing this stuff. We're getting big enough now where we can't just go out and swear all the time. We can't do that. We have to be more mindful of what we're doing because we are a bigger company. Like if he was talking in character, he would have been heel Jericho. And that just didn't happen.
Yeah, but when I think, and again, I could be wrong, but when you've got something like that at your disposal, when the Todd Eastmans of the world go, oh no, this shit's real, like that there's a perfect opportunity to work people. Right.
Yeah, but are you saying that the whole Punk fracas was a work to cover up an injury?
No. I think Punk's an idiot. I should be clear here, and I think that anyone who's been listening long enough knows that I'm not the biggest Punk guy in the world. When I kind of got like back into wrestling, it was SummerSlam 2013. So it was literally, I think I had between SummerSlam and the Royal Rumble of seeing Punk, and this is when he was, you know, working through injuries and feuding with Paul Heyman. And then he was gone. And then I just heard him complain for almost a decade. I know that he was good, but I wasn't watching him when he was good.
He's he's a very good act and a very interesting act, but clearly, I'm sorry if this offends anybody, and I apologize, but he's a child. Clearly, he's got to get his own way or he cracks the shits.
Well, I mean, what, you look, that what the thing he got the most mad about was that Hangman Page promo, which I watched and didn't think anything of it. I didn't even connect the dots about being about cult at all. I just thought the more it was just fucking Hangman saying, you're an asshole, nobody likes you, you shouldn't be the champion because all you do is complain.
Which it is proven to be quite true.
Yeah, which is exactly, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But that's how I took that promo. Like, you should not be the champion because you represent everything that we're trying to not be anymore. That's the way I saw the Hangman promo. I didn't see it as him shooting on anything. Punk's 100% a shoot because he called him out by name.
Mm.
And they called him a coward afterwards. And then doubled up again by doing it at the press conference. So who is the bigger asshole there?
I also think, and I said this when we caught up last, I really wanted Moxley to keep that belt because I think that Moxley wasn't tired. Moxley, as a champion, was still quite credible. And to flip it to Punk was, and, you know, sadly, in some ways, I've been proven right by personality rather than by actual match quality. I think Moxley had produced better matches than Punk right now.
And I tell you what, that promo that Moxley cut on Wednesday was incredible.
The only thing I wished was that the commentators hadn't said a word. Just let Moxley.
Fully agree.
Just let Moxley.
Now, I do want to jump to the question that you posed, Jeff, a little bit earlier, though, which is, do we think we'll see Punk back in AEW? I don't necessarily know if we'll see it anytime soon, but to me, Tony Khan wants this to make money, and CM Punk makes money. And that's something that you can't argue with, right? True. And this is something that I always thought about, you know, when Punk wasn't in wrestling, is, and this is totally anecdotal, but if you are walking through just the shops or whatever, you will see more CM Punk shirts from people who bought them 10 years ago than you will see any other wrestling shirt, every other wrestling shirt combined.
I think with the exception of the NWO, but yeah.
But I don't see NWO shirts out. I see Punk shirts out. And I see old WWE Punk shirts out and about, right? And
I'm serious. I'm again, not gonna say that.
Totally anecdotal. But I think that Punk is a brand that sells to people in our demographic, which is a demographic that has a lot of disposable income to spend on wrestling garbage.
I'm serious. Right? I'm not going to sit back and take this fucking shit.
Okay.
There you go. Right. I think that, yeah, I think that Punk is money. And I think that companies will work against their best interests to make the money that they can make off Punk.
Yeah.
I also think that Tony was very much like, he tried to blame the fact that the digital sales were down on this show because of Clash of the Castle and NXT being on this weekend. That's what it was. But if you look at the time difference between Clash of the Castle, there's no way that's a they weren't competing head to head.
No,
I think Clash of the Castle was what, in the middle of the night in America, or
it was around 2 a.m. here, so it would have been about 3 p.m. there on a Saturday afternoon, which isn't.
But the argument is that people would have been catching up on Clash at the Castle during AEW, I guess.
Which is bullshit, because if you want to see something, you're going to take the option of watching it live as opposed to something that's already happened and watching that replay. You're going to watch the thing that's live.
Yeah.
You're not going to go back. And look, you've already paid for Clash. Like, it's in your WWE network. It's in it. So it's just there. You can watch it whenever you want to watch it.
As Tex Perkins said, the honeymoon is over, baby. It definitely is. The shine is off AEW a little bit. And I think it's events like last week's press conference that contributes to that shine wearing off.
Yeah, it's funny. The one thing that makes, like, I love the fact that they do all these press conferences and they are so very, like, open when it comes to like connecting with the fans, connecting with the press. Because before this, you never saw press conferences. Like WWE are doing them now, and you never saw that before. So that, like, I love the fact that that's happening. That change is great. There's just a lot that happens when you're gonna to spruik that you're so very open and that you're so very like, this is where we're all for the fans and we're for all this sort of. When the fans start saying that they don't like something, you should respond to that and not just say, well, no, it was because of this and because of that. There was some metric, and I don't know it off the top of my head, and the actual numbers, so please don't quote me. They're all going on about like Kenny Omega coming back, and this was a really big thing. And apparently the viewership dropped 200,000 when he was on screen.
Shit,
so, man. So for their matches, they lost 200,000 people turned off. Hmm. And I don't know what that tells you about that. I don't know if that's a coincidence or it's a time it was on or any of these.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know, but that is enough people for it to be a concern.
Yeah. And even after all of this shit that's happened, there's all these controversies and this stuff heading into Dynamite, they only just made it over the million this week.
Jesus.
It was like 1.092 million. So they made it over the million, almost to 1.1. So I won't jip them the 1.0. They literally made it to 1.1. But that's still only the 1.1. And you would think after this, I mean, I'd love to know, because off the top of my head, I have no idea what the Raw ratings were the night after the Montreal screw job.
Hang on, I will tell you.
And if they were appreciably like different from the week before's Raw. Do you know what I mean?
That, I mean, I guess it's a good question, but this feels like, I don't know that that's necessarily a fair comparison. You know what I mean?
Well, why? Why?
The Montreal screw job, like, and what we know about it now is very different from what you would have known about it the night after, right? The night after, it seems like an angle that got out of hand on screen. And again, I wasn't alive at the time, right? I don't know if that's true. I wasn't watching wrestling. But
I think you were alive.
I think I was alive.
I think you were like three or something.
Yeah.
God, I'm old. Fuck.
I would have been a small child at the time, right? And the result is that I don't think wrestling got the kind of coverage that it does now to almost anyone.
It very much did. Like, if you were a wrestling fan, you knew about that Montreal screw job the night it happened, and you were waiting to see what happened on Raw that next night you just didn't know.
What percentage of WWE fans there knew about it, do you think? And what is that, the same percentage of AEW fans who knew about this press conference, Mumbo Jumbo?
Oh God, that's almost impossible to know.
I would say yes, because that the thing that happened with AEW, as much as we wasn't on the pay-per-view, everybody saw it. Anyone that was a hardcore wrestling fan saw that and would have started spreading the thing to other people. Like people that weren't wrestling fans are going, like, you should have seen the shit that CM Punk said at this press conference and would have played it. Whereas the whole thing with the screw job is everyone was just like, you should have seen the shit that happened after. That wasn't the finish that was supposed to happen. Brett even did WCW to the crowd on a camera. Like, I need to find out what's going to happen the next night on Raw.
Just to clear it up, by the way, the reason that I'm so unsure of what happened when the screw job happened, I just Googled it. I was too.
There you go.
Well, come on. Surely you had your pulse on your fingers on the pulse of the wrestling world even then, Lachlan.
I am a wunderkind.
I am disappointed. I think...
Two. Jesus.
Two.
From memory, the night after the Montreal screw job opened with DX doing some midget comedy.
Yeah, they challenged Brett to a rematch, and then there was a midget dressed up as Bret Hart that came out.
Yeah.
And they did a commentary of it going, Brett tried to fight hard, but as usual, he was coming up short.
Yeah, it was all that sort
classic
of
classic stuff.
Yeah.
You had to be there. You weren't. You were too.
You were there.
You might have been Bret Hart.
I think what was nice about the way AEW handled this is they were honest, they were open, and they kind of made hay. So they made a great show out of something that could have been really disappointing.
Well, they were really honest. All they said was that the titles have been stripped. They never actually said that they were suspended on TV at all.
Yeah, but they let
Tony never said anyone's name. They didn't say, if you notice on that show, none of these people's names were said at all on that show.
No, you can't.
All right, let's quickly talk about the Grand Slam Tournament of Champions. Let's get picks. People remaining in the tournament. Chris Jericho, Bryan Danielson, Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin, Jon Moxley. Todd, who have you got?
Well, I think it'll be Jon Moxley, but I said to you guys off air, it would not surprise me after seeing the way that Chris handled himself at the press conference if Tony didn't go, this is the guy that probably should be like steadying the ship at the moment. And also, as a side note, if you watch that press conference, I don't know if you can pick it up in the audio on the podcast feed that we put out, but when that interview part ends with Jericho leans across to Tony as he gets up and goes, some shit's gone down. At least, because obviously it happened during the swerve part. That's when the actual altercation happened. So Jericho knew about when he walked out, and he didn't sell that at all during that press conference. Is that when he got up to leave and sort of said goodbye to Tony, he's gone, some shit's gone down. You might need to sort this out. In other words, to say, wrap up your fucking, the end part that you do quickly, because you're going to need to sort this out. I just think that Jericho, it could be the guy for Tony. It's probably a very safe pick. Yep. Because let's face it, you put it on Danielson, you're worried about injury. You put it on Moxley, you're worried about Moxley. Because you don't know. Like, well as he's come out of everything, it's still a very...
That's right.
Yeah. Jericho, for me, is the safest bet possible. Hangman went out in that first round because that was a punishment.
Getting curtain called.
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah.
Jeff, who's your pick?
That was a question.
I'm actually going to go with Bryan Danielson. I actually think that it's the closest person to Punk without having Punk there in terms of his popularity and his presence. I think he's already lost to Jericho once, so he's going to take Jericho out on Dynamite this week, and then he'll fight Moxley in the final, and it'll be a good bruising battle. And in the end, he'll get the Bushido knee, and off we go. We're off the races. What about you, Logan?
Sammy Guevara. No, obviously not. Look, I think the logical part of me wants to pick Jon Moxley. I think that if I'm predicting the tournament, I think we end with a Moxley-Danielson final. I think Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin are neither of them, regardless of who wins, are getting past Moxley. Moxley is in the final of this tournament. So whether it's Jericho or Danielson on the other side is the question mark.
Well, they always telegraphed it too, because they did the whole MJF Moxley standoff thing.
My prediction is actually that MJF cashes in the chip to make the final a triple threat. And MJF,
I think it's going to be that whoever wins is exhausted, and MJF comes out and does almost nothing, slaps him and pins him, like nothing. Because then he's won the chip by doing nothing, and he wins the belt by doing nothing. Can you imagine the heat?
Yeah, I definitely think MJF walks out of Grand Slam as the champion.
Yeah, agreed.
Which is like, it is predictable booking, but the one thing I don't like about it is that it's Grand Slam, so it's in New York, so they will cheer MJF.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it happens. He could go out there and take a shit on a small child that was dying of cancer, and those crowd would still cheer him.
Has he not done that yet?
No. That's
you guys haven't been watching GCW.
next on the list. Look, there has been a whole lot there. I can't think of anything else to say. Do you guys have any other closing comments on the catastrophe that has been?
Just one thing.
Yep.
Just one thing. It is freaking awesome to have Death Triangle with the belts. That's so the match quality. It's going to be off the charts. It's going to be so good. And it's going to be so much fun. And the great thing is they could be heels one week and faces the next, and it wouldn't matter because they are truly tweeners and they're so much fun to watch. And I can't wait. That makes me much more excited than the Elite having them.
Can I be a Debbie Downer?
Of course you can.
Park's not here all the time. Park's always ever in England. Do you know what I mean? That's the only thing I don't like about it. I don't know. Obviously, I think that, what's his name? Alex Reynolds, I think, got injured.
Yeah.
On the pay-per-view. Because otherwise, I would have put Dark Order in that and had them just go over.
I would agree with that.
That's a really good point, Todd. What we need is titles to be on AEW TV more often. There's a real shortage of the title belts over there.
So, and I think they keep losing them. What are you talking about? Title Reigns lasts an average of fucking a day and a half on that company at the moment.
I also think, yeah, that's just because the champs keep getting injured. I also think that, well, one champ keeps getting injured. Yeah. I also think that, by the way, if you hate Roman Reigns, notice he's held the belt for 2 years, CM Punk 5 days. Just saying. I also think that we need more tournaments in AEW. There hasn't been one for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, we were short a tournament. One ends, you got to get another one going. Yeah, I just looked it up. Kenny Omega has had the longest reign with the AEW World title at 346 days, so less than a year. There has been a total of 7 reigns so far for a title that started in 2019. So that's interesting. The last two reigns.
I mean, you got to think that Punk's first one would have been still going if it wasn't for that injury. So, I mean, there is that to it.
His second one would probably still be going as well.
That's true.
Yeah. None of the last 4 title reigns have been more than 88 days. So there you go. It's a little neat fact. The last two were 3 and 11. Delightful. look, we could sit here and talk about the AEW train wrecks all night, but the show's called Chicken Salad. So let's move on. Let's talk about some things that, look, let's start with the downers while we're in downer territory, and then we can bring it back up. Todd, what was shit this week?
I'm going to say something that I said last week, but it's for a different person. Last week I went on about the whole Punk thing, how he was like sad and blah, blah, blah. And all Ace Steel did was say 2 or 3 words. And he was all of a sudden happy, determined Punk that he hasn't killed me yet and all this sort of stuff. The MJF promo, where he came out at the start, he was all big baby face, blah, blah, blah. Then as soon as Moxie came out, he just went heel. And I'm talking like 180 degree turn. I hate everyone, blah, blah, blah. It was just, to me, it was like you just wasted the last 20 minutes of that stuff you were doing, where you could have been doing all of that from the start and kept up the heat that you had at the end when you left. That heat you had when you left was amazing. You could have kept that going through thing and not just waste it to wear Jared Allen jersey for 20 minutes and take it off going, he sucks, and all of that sort of stuff. That was, to me, that was just, it was the first time that I think MJF has done something where I was like, I don't like that. I just thought it was wishy-washy. I thought it was very...
Can I throw in a counterpoint?
Yeah.
Show was in Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
So what's the MJF reception going to be?
Yeah, but that's why as soon as he takes the mic, he could have done what he did when Moxley came out and it would have turned him around like he did.
See, I don't think it was. I think it was really clever character work by doing a quote-unquote face promo that was really him being a thinly veiled lying jerk. The way he said everything was so insincere while being exactly the thing that gets a cheap pop from the crowd, that to me it made total sense that as soon as he was confronted with anyone who was actually standing in opposition to him, that the facade faults.
I just thought it was like, it was like he went, ah, you got me. No, I hate everyone. Ah, you got me. Do you know what I mean? I didn't like it. Like, if other people saw what you saw, that's cool. But for me, I just, like, he could have spent that time building on more. He could have been, like, ripping into these people you say were champions. They last, what, 5 days? They last 3 days? I've been the gold standard of this company for how long? And I've never got a chance. And now, because I'm smart, I've got this in my pocket now. Anytime I want that title, I'm going to get it. So you guys can have your tournaments. I'm not going to find your tournament. Because at the end of it, I'm going to be the champion. He could have done that. He could have condensed that whole thing. It felt to me like they just wasted X amount of airtime that could have been used somewhere else.
Yeah, fair enough. Jeff?
Mine is, and this is something that I talk about a lot, is the pure arrogance of the company to put 15 matches on a show that don't warrant 15 matches. When you've got Clash at the Castle feeling sprightly and short at 3.5 hours with 6 matches, it's wrong that any company thinks they should put a show on for the better part of 5 hours that has 14 matches. And after a certain point, the audience are visibly over it. Enough. 3.5 hours. That's all your show needs to be.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. My chicken shit for the week is Jade Cargill versus Athena.
Thank you. That was going to be my add-on. I was going to add that one on.
Speaking of stuff that I complain about.
let's talk about how, you know, we had a four-way for the AEW Women's World Championship that I'm really happy that Toni Storm got it. I think that's a great pick because they're not just sticking with Britt Baker, because it feels like the only two women, there was three women that they would have win. One's out with injury and the other two are Britt and Cargill. And it feels like Athena should be on the top of the mountain. But instead, we've thrown her in a match that was shit because Jade Cargill is green as grass and she's lost a match for the secondary title. So where does she go from there? Because spoiler alert, AEW is not going to have a women's feud on the show that's not working towards one of these two titles, because they can barely fit those on the show for the women. They've got so much going on. It's a 15 match show and 2.5 of them were women's matches.
But Lockie, in Jade Cargill's defense, she came dressed and cosplayed as her wrestling ability.
Yeah. Pure green. So that was in the She-Hulk costume. You're absolutely right.
The one thing that terrifies me is that they were in the press conference with Toni Storm and they were talking about like women she would love to face and some of the good women that work in AEW. And there are some very good women. There's Kara Shida. There's Serena Deeb.
Even Riho.
Mercedes Martinez is like that. And the two women that Tony decides to talk about as being two great wrestlers that really deserve a chance are Penelope Ford and Red Velvet. That to me is like, as soon as I heard him say that, I'm like, well, now I know why your fucking women's division is in the shape it's in.
But to be fair, I think that's one of those moments that Lachlan was talking about earlier, where they said, we want to start to build two people up. Can you pick two people that, you know, they're not there yet. Penelope Ford can do okay things. Red Velvet, I don't think we've seen enough of. So to be fair, I think that that's what she was told to do.
She didn't say them. It was Tony that said those two.
Tony things. Said that?
Like no, Tony Khan, not Tony.
No, that's a, yeah. Too many Tonys.
Yes. But sorry, I should have said
TK. Tony Schiavone there as well.
Yeah. I should have said TK. But yeah. The two names that came to his mind as being two of the best women in that division were Red Velvet and Penelope Ford. And that's when I went, this is why I hate the AEW women's division. Because you've got so many really, really good workers and you persist on using people like Ty Conti. As good as much potential as she has, there is no way that old mate Cargill should be like on the winning streak that she is. Because she can't, like we talked about it before with her. She's a champion that can't carry another worker. And if you're a champion, you should be at least be able to carry someone to a decent match. And she needs to be carried to a decent match with everyone that works. So anyone that works her has to be better than her.
Okay, I do agree with you. Right. So who's going to beat her? Who the fuck's going to take the belt off her?
Well, that's the problem, because the way they've built her. They can't. And Athena, I'm sorry, I don't get it. Like, I understand why WWE probably let her go. She's one of those people that just is missing that something.
Did you watch the Asuka feud?
Yeah, Asuka's amazing.
Asuka is...
Look, I'm not going to downplay Asuka, but yeah, you're allowed to not see it, I guess.
Yeah.
No. I get it. I'm in the middle of you guys, right? I get that she's good, but she's got to have the right opponent, and Jade Cargill is not the right opponent.
No.
The problem is not entirely Athena's, but she didn't adapt to what the match needed, and she was the veteran, so she should have. I think you put Athena in there against Statlander, and we're going to see some great stuff, because Statlander's got enough experience and is still bigger than her. I actually think, despite being a shit match, they should have pulled the trigger on Athena at that point. Because if not, then when?
Yeah, that's the thing. You just don't know who they're going to try and build up now to. God's sake, if it's fucking Kira Hogan.
They've got Allie on the roster as the bunny. Just like it. They've got great women that they're not using at all.
I actually have a question about one of their women, and this is coming from left field. What are they going to do with Julie Hart now that Malakai Black's left? And what are they going to do with Buddy and Brody?
Yeah, well, we didn't really cover that a hell of a lot. The rumor going around is that Malakai had asked for his release and was turned down, but he'd asked for the release on the fact that it was mental health reasons. And also the way that he feels his character is being booked and used at the moment. So I think he's at his wit's end with it and wanted to be gone. So I don't know if he's taking time off. Instead of a release, they've gone, look, just take some time. Because he's not doing any, his indie dates have been replaced by Jay Lethal now around the place. So he's not even doing any indie dates. So because we sort of skimmed over it at the end of the match at what was the name of it? All Out. When the cameras were away, apparently he was at the top of the stage. He like gave him one of those where he kisses his hand to the crowd and took a bow, and him and Brody Lee and Buddy all hugged, and then they walked out. So I don't know what's going on at all with the House of Black.
I think the House of Black can continue without Black.
The House of Bees.
Yeah, that's right.
And Buddy.
Look, let's get more positive. Chicken salad for the week. Todd.
Look, I really, really liked Rollins and Riddle. Just because they told a story. And I'm a sucker for telling a good story. And at the moment, those two are telling a story. That and everything that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are doing. Just this week on Raw, when Kevin came out and goes, you found your first name.
Yeah.
It's Austin. Austin's your first name.
Yeah, that was great.
I love it. And he's just, the fact they've just hit the hard reset. And guess what, mate? You're NXT Owens again. Just go out and be him. And he's like, cool, because that's just me. So there are my two chicken shits at the moment, chicken salads at the moment this week.
I love Owens.
I like that they've made him NXT Owens, but they made him comical face NXT Owens. So he's almost like, you know, he's doing the smart ass thing, but he's doing it with the crowd in his pocket. And it's nice to see. It's nice to see. For me, my chicken salad, well, it's Sheamus against Volta or Gunther. I thought that was a delight. just to watch the chops. And my chest was sore by the end, but I had a huge grin on my face. I've actually watched it twice and went, and both times just gone, this is going to be a match of the year candidate at the end of the year. And it's no surprise. Let's enjoy that. The other thing I'm really enjoying, because I am rediscovering WWE, because I had walked away from it for a long time, is everything Chad Gable is doing. Doosh. All of it is the biggest piss take. He's clearly having fun. He and Otis make such a dynamic team to watch. Finally, they kind of found a good role for them. And he's got this whole shit-eating grin, I'm sorry. Like, he just kind of knows everything and he knows something. And to be honest, I can see him winning a secondary belt and doing a honky-tonk man type run with it, just kind of holding it for ages and having... And even the tag belts would work under the same proviso and having people so angry about him holding it, but just being... So, but also liking him holding it by the same token.
There's also one that we haven't seen yet because it's on Rampage this week. Dax is up against Cesaro for the ROH world title. So that will be a good match.
Oh, mama.
So
yeah, look, my chicken salad for the week is, I know we ragged a lot on AEW this week, but for me, that Moxley promo, I'm a bit sad to say that I haven't been excited about Moxley recently. And that promo did it. I 100% agree with what you said, Jeff. Every time the commentators opened their mouths in those gaps, I went, shut up and let me listen to the promo. Let him stand there and speak, because he nailed it. That was a beautiful fighting face promo that put over every other person in the tournament while also saying, I have a chance to win this thing. I need to win this thing, and I'm going to do it. It's 100% bought in.
It's also that thing about not talking during the promo, letting it breathe a little bit, letting it breathe. My other slight chicken salad that I forgot is every time Regal talks to Excalibur.
And is completely in love with him. Yeah.
Just completely, completely the greatest thing. And it's getting deeper and deeper. Like, it started with, oh, you're a cute little marshmallow. Yum, 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 yum. And now it's, oh, you're my little petite four that I'm going to rub all over my body. Yum, 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 yum. And it's just brilliant. Anyway, sorry, Locke.
No, also, there was one that we didn't even bring up because of all the shit that happened this week in AEW. We didn't even talk about this. Daniel Garcia winning the Pure title off.
Wonderful.
Off Wheeler Yuta, yeah.
Off the beige boy, yeah.
Damn, Daniel, we can't keep doing this. And Danielson coming out and shaking his hand as well at the end. And not only that, Yuta going on Twitter and saying, you know, being respectful, following that code of honor, saying he wants to come back for the belt, and it was a great match. Let's do it again. Great stuff. Yes. And look, if you guys out there listening think that this has been great stuff, please go give us a rating. You know, if jump on Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars. It helps us get into other people's ears. It's a really big favor. And you know what? Subscribe too. You can do it on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Search for Wrestle Radio Australia. Hit the subscribe button. Socials. You can follow at Wrestle Radio AU on Twitter and Instagram. On Facebook, search for Wrestle Radio Australia. Hit that like button. And let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear. Also, you can find our merch going over to Redbubble. Search for Wrestle Radio Australia. All of the proceeds from that don't go into our pockets. It goes to Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life, two amazing charities supporting men's mental health here in Australia. How was that for a transition, boys?
Not bad. Jeffrey, put across all your WrestleBrainier stuff.
Oh, thank you, Toddles. Next weekend, that is Friday the 16th, Saturday the 17th, Sunday the 18th, WrestleBrainia hits Sydney. I'm going to tell you, our first show, as announced this week, we have Shazza McKenzie versus Unsocial Jordan. It's going to be a lot of fun. Shazza is one of those wonderful larger-than-life characters, and Jordan, he's trouble. Saturday, we're not quite ready to reveal the cast yet. We'll do that during the week. But Sunday, I'm going to tell you one cast member. This is exclusive.
Exclusive.
Australia's own Robbie Eagles.
Ho, ho, ho!
Yeah.
Make sure you get along to that. Look, if you want that ticket link, you can find it at the Wrestle Radio AU on Twitter.
It'll also be, it's also in the description for this episode. So you can go on Spotify, iTunes, wherever it is you're listening to this thing, go to the description of the show. The link for the tickets for WrestleBrainia is in the description.
Thank you.
Yeah. Also make sure, you know, while you're following things on Twitter, make sure you're also following all of us on Twitter. You can follow at Beast Eastman to follow Todd. You can follow at Lachlan Albert to follow me. You can follow at Wrestle_Brainia if you want to follow WrestleBrainia. And you can also follow Jeff Setti, who I believe is at, what is it, Jeff?
Jeff Setti. Jeff_Setti.
Makes it easy, doesn't
Pretty
it?
Pretty easy.
Anything else we want to say before we're off, chaps?
Yes, this weekend, make sure you go out and hit up some local wrestling in your area. I'm not going to tell you what's around everywhere around the country because I'm not too sure what's going on. Melbourne MCW for sure. Go and check them out. Mitch and Adam Brooks will put on one hell of a match. And also just Delta and Jess Troy. That's a match that could sell itself, to be honest with you.
I agree. But if you can't leave your house, if you can't get out, don't forget it's going to be live on Fight TV at 7.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, with that, thank you, Jeff Setti. Thank you, Todd Eastman. I've been Lachlan Albert. Until next time, have a good one.
Bye.